Hello, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show Network's dedicated podcast to all things comic, manga, and serial illustrated media related. And this week I am joined by Andrew.
Hello.
And Rob.
Hello.
Hi, Vin.
Thank you for introducing us, Mick.
It's been my pleasure.
How I subtly worked your name into the conversation.
Yeah, I did. People know who I am.
I don't. Who are you?
I'm the old man of comics.
No, no, it's old man comics.
You see, that gives an image like Old Father Time, doesn't it?
Oh, Andrew, how does the song go again?
Oh, what old man comics? I don't actually know any difference to Old Man River.
You have your own theme tune,
or indeed the tune.
Oh, yes. So, what are we talking about today?
Oh, who cares? No.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's call it a day.
I believe we were going to have a little chinwag, a discussion about mature comics.
Yeah, in honour of Mick being officially back on the show.
Okay.
And, yeah.
It's because he's old.
I prefer the term matured and experienced.
So, are we saying experienced comics? Because, you know, they'll be a bit dog-eared and ropey, won't they?
Well, unless they've been slabbed, yeah.
No, this is specifically, we are going to be having a little chat about kind of big boy grown-up comics that are very serious.
The ones that have got a big M on them.
Okay.
Yeah, the ones that, you know, can either tackle complicated and adult themes, or alternatively show off Bruce Wayne's Batarang.
Apparently DC are not going to show that anymore.
No, they're going to digitally remove all the Johnsons.
All the Johnsons.
All the little Master Bruces.
But not to me.
That's a gag that works on both levels.
Exactly.
But only I spotted it.
No, I spotted it. That's why I said it.
What does this say about me?
What does this say about comic books?
Yeah.
I think it says, this is why, especially in mainstream superhero comics, trying to do a specifically for mature audiences book often falls flat on its face, because it's basically like the kind of thing that RoboCop was making fun of, where as soon as you decide, oh, we're going to go for an 18 rating, that's it, all the toys are out the box, we're going to throw them against the wall, we're going to have all the blood and all the violence, because we're very serious.
Yes, and people will buy that for a dollar.
And I do think that sometimes that mature label does get used just for a comic book publisher to just put some titillation and gratuitous blood, guts and gore in. There's not actually any theme that warrants it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely it, because that's why you get stuff like Batman. Batman Damned is, I think, the actual name of the comic. Where is it? They've said, we're doing a mature labels imprint. You write a mature Batman story. And so Brian Azzarello said, well, guess Bruce Wayne's got to get naked.
Oh, yeah. See, this bugs me because it goes back to, you remember that Frank Miller Batman? I'm sure if Frank Miller could have put
white in there. Yeah, we all remember Frank Miller Batman.
Yeah, I'm sure if Frank Miller could have
put a slab of meat.
Yeah, if he could have put a wang in there, he would have. You know that.
I mean, I assume Frank Miller just sends all his scripts in with every single male character naked and erect. And it's just some poor colourist job to draw underpants over them.
That explains a lot.
What if the characters Frank Miller draws are actually really thin? It's just they have to be booked out afterwards to make sense.
I
to kind of cover up the shame.
I suspect that those characters are naked, but in a metaphorical sense that we're not clever enough to have figured out.
Now you're going into some dodgy Alan Moore territory.
Oh yeah. Now there's a man who really knows how to take the mature rating on a comic and twist its meaning.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess Alan Moore's kind of the one to introduce the mainstream idea of mature comics.
Yeah.
But I think Watchmen is basically the first big, hey, comics aren't just for kids book.
Yeah. And I think we've mentioned this before on the show, that it is the sort of watershed where suddenly we got dark and gritty, flawed heroes and stuff.
Yeah. For better or worse, in a lot of cases.
And also, it gave us Dr. Manhattan naked. So it works on both counts of this argument.
Yes. It's weird, though, because manga's a big thing now, right? But manga has been doing kind of mature comics since the 70s, since the early 70s, I think.
Ah, now, let me correct you there, young man.
Yeah?
Because manga as an art form has existed far longer than that and has had a mature readership for far longer than that.
Yes, it has. I'm talking about for mainstream publication.
Well, that's the thing. It is mainstream publication in Japan.
Yeah, all right. Maybe I should specify. Mainstream publication that basically entered the Western market eventually.
Ah.
Okay. So
yes, not all of us like to enjoy a good old erotic wood carving back in the day.
Exactly.
In our school library, that's all we had.
The fisherman's wife.
We had wood carvings everywhere, but some were on the top shelf, and you had to get one of the taller teachers to reach them down for you, and he'd charge you like 2 cigarettes to get them.
They were hidden by a bunch of black leaves.
Yeah.
Oh, old man comics is showing his age.
And we used to sit around the fire in the middle of the library.
A cave, as it's also known.
And told stories about the shadows that danced on the walls.
Fortunately, lots of early literature was lost to unfortunate woodpile mix-ups.
Yes. Watchmen was kind of the watershed moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
go on.
I think to tie it back to the manga idea, it's the start of the idea that I think is a lot more common now, that comics aren't a genre of themselves. They're just a medium.
Yeah.
So it's kind of working out, we can tell more than just this one type of story.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think probably sort of in terms of the mainstream comic that people might be familiar with the characters because of the Netflix series, Jessica Jones, that did mature comics really well because it was a mature comic, but not in a sort of gratuitous, let's drop an F-bomb here and have a bit of gratuitous nudity there.
Yeah.
It was about the issues that it dealt with within the plot rather than just something that, like I said before, would be on the top shelf in the newsagents.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because in manga, you actually have demarcations. In the West, we just have this mature rating, and that's basically it. But in manga, they actually kind of compartmentalize it into either older women, older men, and younger women and younger men, or boys and girls, you know?
Yeah. But I think that's because traditionally there's always been a manga for everybody, hasn't there?
Yeah.
You know, if you're a plumber with interests in plumbing-related shenanigans, there's probably a manga out there about a plumber.
There is. I'm not going to tell you what it is because I can't remember what it's called.
But like you know, a few years ago, we listened to a lecture by a manga artist, and she'd just finished doing a series of manga for mature ladies, which was a manga version of the Shakespeare plays.
Was it Sonia Leung?
I can't remember her name. It was a fascinating lecture, but we were more familiar with the voice of her translator.
Ah, okay. Right. So she was Japanese then?
Yes.
All right. Because I know there was a Sweat Drop Studios in the UK. They also did kind of a manga Shakespeare thing as well.
But the thing about this manga was that it was aimed at mature ladies and was told from the perspective of the sort of matriarchs within the Shakespeare plays. So Romeo and Juliet, for example, was told from the point of view of Juliet's mother.
See, that's an interesting angle. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I just wanted to add, going back slightly to Jessica Jones, that Marvel are actually doing, at the moment, a Jessica Jones series by Kelly Thompson, which they've done this kind of, I think might be their one and only mature title at the moment that does actually handle it well.
Yeah, because... because
their Max imprint seems to have died a death, doesn't it?
Yeah, but there seems to be like the one and a slight resurrection of that. And it's just, sometimes it is violent, but because, you know, she's investigating murder cases and also she swears a lot because that's who the character is.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's weird, though, because I was the Max imprint, as you said, Mick, seems to have died a death, but I still have fond memories of some of the Ultimate stuff, because the Ultimate stuff dealt with some mature themes. It didn't go as far out with it as the Max, you know, Marvel's Max lines, but, you know, it still had some serious storylines in there, especially in stuff like the X-Men.
Yeah, which is weird, because a lot of that stuff was Mark Millar, who I feel like now is one of the worst offenders for, look at me, look at what a big boy I am, all my characters say this curse words.
Oh, you mean like Kick-Ass?
Yeah, like Kick-Ass. And just pretty much everything he writes is what if traditional comic book, but everyone's a bit of a prick.
Yeah. I think the mature comic of kind of the moment, though, or of the last few years, is Saga.
Yes, I definitely wanted to mention Saga at some point, because that manages to explore like actual mature themes of, you know, kind of love and war and raising children, and, like, the futility of violence, whilst also being absolutely filthy from start to finish.
Yes. Saga's one of those weird ones. I kind of love it and hate it at the same time.
See, I just love it.
Oh, what was the seal guy called in there?
Goose.
Hey?
Goose, the seal man.
Yeah, he fought in the war.
He did. He's killed people, Ron.
I know, but he's so good. it just got me thinking, because, Saga's, Brian K. Vaughan, and is it Image do Saga?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the more mature stuff comes out of Image these days.
Yeah, it doesn't really come out of Marvel and DC. I mean, we haven't mentioned DC, but DC are doing some weird crossover stuff for the last few years, which I don't understand.
Oh, DC. I was going to get to DC because, I mean, mainly the thing that kicked off this idea was the whole Batman debacle.
Yeah.
But actually, yesterday I read their newest event. They're doing Heroes in Crisis.
It's always a crisis, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so bad.
I mean, surely they'd set up a department somewhere on planet Earth called, say, Crisis Management, so that next time there's a crisis, they know there's a line they can call for advice and support.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I feel like the problem with Heroes in Crisis is, when it was first sort of thought up, it seemed like Tom King wanted to write a series about kind of looking at the sort of mental health issues that superheroes might suffer from.
Yeah.
But now it's just been warped into this weird murder mystery, very identity crisis-esque.
I was literally going to say that sounds a lot like Identity Crisis.
It is. It's even like it starts off in the very similar way of, look, we've killed off some characters to show how very serious we are.
Wow. I don't know what to say to that. It's bizarre.
Yeah, it is. I think it also kind of showcases the problem with when a lot of mainstream books, like DC and Marvel, try to do more serious stories. Is a lot of the time it can come across very ham-fisted. I think because they exist in this inherently, like, very larger-than-life world.
Yeah.
Trying to shoehorn more realistic elements in can often come across as just not giving them the respect they deserve.
And I think sometimes possibly what they need to do is bring in specific writing teams to deal with those elements, you know, not stick with the people who write the ordinary stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Because I think that is another very big problem, is it's the kind of stuff that you see with a lot of the racism and the sexism of comics past, of just, it's a bunch of guys who have no experience of these things going, nah, we can definitely write a respectful story about, like, mental health or abuse. But I think we definitely don't need to consult with anyone who's actually gone through it.
Interestingly, I just did a Google search for identity crisis, and one of the results that came back was identity crisis, Harley therapy. Because if anybody was going to give you therapy about an identity crisis, Harley Quinn's the very person you'd want to go to.
I mean, yes, but the exact opposite of what you said. Yeah, I think the trick is to kind of maybe concentrate on just telling a good story first, and then maybe try and just weave some of these themes in the background.
Yeah, it's sad because comic books have been trying to become mature for decades. they've been trying to. I think they regard maturity as some kind of, I don't know, what's the word? Not status symbol. It's, you know, popular affirmation. You know, they're there, they're real, they're like literature, but with pictures, that sort of thing.
I think the difficulty they've had previously, like when I was a kid, your edgy comics, and then by the time you were sort of 13, 14, you developed interests and hobbies, so you moved on from comics to magazines about those specializations.
Yeah.
And that was the way that everybody saw it. So comic book writers kept on writing for sort of, well, depending on which comic it was that they were writing, if it was a comic aimed at sort of 5 and 6 year olds, they'd carry on writing for 5 and 6 year olds. And then those 5 and 6 year olds would take on a new comic when they were a bit older. I think, and another one that we constantly refer to as being a watershed is 2000 AD. I think the characters in 2000 AD have grown with their audience.
Yeah.
So like the later Judge Dredd stories that are getting published now resonate with people my age, just as the original Judge Dredd stories back in 1979 resonated with us then.
Mm. Yeah, it's like, I think some of the first Dredd stuff I read was like The Apocalypse Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to go back and like read some of the very early strips, I was surprised by how quite campy and cheesy they are.
Yeah. And then you go forward a little bit further and you've got the America storyline. I mean, you know, for mature satire and you mentioned RoboCop earlier, that sort of poking at the idea of democracy in a totalitarian regime, you know, a sort of permitted democracy, almost an illusion of it, you wouldn't have got that in Judge Dredd 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
Mm. It's sad, you know, because Watchmen is DC now, isn't it?
It always was. It was the Vertigo imprint.
Was it a Vertigo imprint? Yeah. The sad thing is, DC seems kind of bound and determined to kind of recapture the magic that they had with Watchmen, but with all sorts of other stuff.
I think that's where both of the big two sort of fall down.
Yeah.
They have a massive phenomenal hit and then try to make everything that follows it that same phenomenal hit. And then when it doesn't work, they scrap everything that they're doing.
And start again.
And try and come up with another massive phenomenal hit. Rather than, as Andrew said, just concentrate on developing the characters that you've got, telling interesting and exciting stories about them, and let it just organically grow.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially because 9 times out of 10, they don't realise what made the good thing good in the first place.
Yeah.
Oh, you so mean...
It's like Watchmen, because people don't like Watchmen because it's dark. They like it because it's a way of looking at superheroes that no one else had really done before.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, when everything looks at superheroes that way, I guess modern comic book readers, if they went back and read Watchmen, they'd go, what was so new about that?
Yeah, it's basically, John Carter all over again, isn't it?
Mm, yeah.
The thing is, with DC, DC seemed to be a little bit worse than Marvel when it comes to the mature storylines. It seems like DC have a bit more difficulty handling the mature storylines than Marvel do, given some of the stuff that some of the stunts that DC have pulled compared with some of the stuff that Marvel have pulled.
Yeah, I think that is because DC have had some really big successes with things like Watchmen and a lot of the Vertigo stuff, you know, like Hellblazer and Swamp Thing and Sandman.
Yeah, whereas, I mean, Marvel, there was Tony Stark's alcoholism was one of the mature storylines, which I thought was pretty interesting at the very least.
Yeah, because I feel like those stories, they were still fun comic book stories at their heart.
Yeah.
It's just they also had this kind of bit more of a serious theme running through them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what the publishers need to think about. They need to sort of say, right, we want to do more mature stuff. Do we spin that off in a special series for those readers and carry on doing the stuff that we've always done for 10 and 11-year-olds in the normal sort of weekly or monthly issues, rather than trying to do it all in one title?
Yeah, it is. It's very have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, you can't do. I mean, one of the reasons that the Marvel Max imprint started was because Marvel wanted to be free of the Comics Code Authority.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, you don't need to do a separate line for that reason. But you do need to separate, because whenever you've got a comic book that's aimed at 10 and 11-year-olds, you can't pitch it at them and the people of our age and satisfy both equally. I mean, yes, we can enjoy a good rip-roaring, you know, campy Spider-Man story, but for something with a bit of depth, you need to pitch that differently. It needs to be its own separate monthly line.
Mm.
And I think they're scared to do that because they think they're going to split their audience. Whereas what they're actually doing is potentially launching a new line at the very audience that's got disposable income.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think probably the only thing I would disagree with is I probably wouldn't say that comics are specifically like 10 and 11-year-olds now.
Mm.
I think they are quite good at hitting that kind of very nebulous, like, 16 to 45 market.
There are
the same kind of massive group that the movies appeal to.
Yeah, there's a lot more late teens, 20s and 30s reading comics now than there ever were before.
But then where is the new audience going to come from? Where's the next generation of audience going to come from? How do they, you know, I read the sort of, I wouldn't have read Watchmen in 1985 if I'd not been reading Batman in 1975.
See, this is the thing. I remember, and I think we might have this comic kicking around somewhere. 1987, notoriously bad year. John Byrne was writing Superman, and
John Byrne.
Yeah, he did something I was not allowed to read this comic. I think I was. I think I managed to steal my brother's copy and read it to find out what all the fuss was about. And I was like, I put it down. I was like, oh, not much happened. It was. Basically, Superman and Big Barda and Big Barda's husband, what's his name? I think you know which one I'm on about. They were up against
Mr. Miracle.
Yeah,
versus
Mr. Miracle.
Sleaze.
Yeah, Sleaze. And somehow Superman and Big Barda were hypnotized and convinced to star in an adult film.
Yeah, you see, that's what I'd class as the bad mature title.
Yeah, and all I'm saying is it seemed like off the back of Watchmen, they tried to make Superman more mature, even, you know, all the way back then.
Yeah, but that's the point. That's not making him more mature, that's making him just sleazy.
Yeah.
Whereas to actually make it mature, you'd just do storylines that maybe dealt with issues might affect your readership.
This is the thing. Later on, during the 90s, you know, with the Superman comics, there were two really good Superman storylines. There were only little storylines, like one or two issues, and then they were done. But there were two of the ones that stuck with me. One of them was involving that villain. He's a puppet, and he's not
Scarface.
Not Scarface. The other one, Toymaker. Sorry.
Oh, Toyman.
Toyman. Was it Toyman or Toymaker? Something like that. He'd kidnapped a load of children. And Superman was desperately going around with the police trying to find these kidnapped kids, and it turned. And spoiler alert, slight for these, by the way, if you've never read them. But basically, one of the journalists who Superman was friends with, his kid was also one of the kidnapped kids. His kid came forward, stepped up and helped free all the other kids, but got killed in the process. So it involved child murder. And the other one was all about domestic violence. And those were things that, you know, this was, I think it was around, when was Columbine?
90-something.
I think that Superman storyline came out around that time, for the child murder one. And the domestic violence one was another one where he was trying to convince this woman, he had no legal power to actually intervene. He was trying to convince the woman that staying with her boyfriend or husband, wherever it was going to be bad for her. And then the next thing he finds out is that the woman had been killed by her partner. And that was basically Superman powerless to do anything because he was bound by the law. And those two, I thought, were really interesting Superman storylines because he's bound by the legal framework. He can't go outside of it because of what he represents.
Batman would have.
Yeah, Batman would have, but Batman isn't Superman. And that's the thing. For me, those sorts of Superman stories were more interesting than Superman punching somebody through a wall.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I mean. Is it sometimes it can be better to just work in your more mature themes.
Yeah.
So it's all just a tightrope, really, that kind of people often get wrong.
Yeah. I mean, there's loads of so-called mature comics right now. I mean, everyone says The Walking Dead is mature because it's got blood and gore and zombies eating people. Is it?
Well, I guess it's got the potential to have mature themes because you've got that whole sort of trust, loyalty and betrayal thing going on between small groups of survivors and things like that.
Yeah.
And my entire knowledge of The Walking Dead comes from seeing trailers for the TV show. But I can see how there are mature themes in there. But yes, the bulk of its mature rating comes from the fact that there's blood and guts and gore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a good way to sum it up is mature comics can work when you have a story that you feel needs to be told rather than just trying to bash out something that fits to like some vague idea you have of what grown-up comics should be.
Yeah, so basically stories like V for Vendetta, which actually had a point when it was written.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that sort of thing. What was the point of Preacher?
I guess we're sticking it to those stuffy old religious sons again.
Yeah, I mean, I think Preacher's one, and I really enjoy the TV show.
Yeah.
And I went back over and read volume one of the comic and didn't enjoy it as much, but I think it's more of a slow burner. I probably enjoy volume two better.
Yeah. So I did the same thing, and I think it's just Preacher is a very 90s comic.
It is, isn't it?
But I think, you know, for all the fact that you've got a hard-drinking, hard-fighting preacher man and his gang, I think it does explore themes of belief and faith and tradition. You've got elements of racial tension in there because it's, you know, predominantly set in the Deep South. So, yes, it does both. Mm. It does the blood, the guts, the gore, the titillation, but it also explores the things.
Tell you what, one of my favourite mature comics, one of my favourite all-time mature comics is Transmetropolitan.
Yeah, shocking. I have a shocking admission as the newly appointed comic book sage.
Oh?
Never read Transmetropolitan.
Oh, God.
Mainly because I can't say it and I refuse to read a book whose name I can't say.
But it has a guy with the best name in comics. His name's Spider Jerusalem.
I know. It's good. It's on the list of things I'm definitely going to have to read at some point.
Hey, I wasn't wrong about Lock and Key, was I?
You were. It's not an issue of you being wrong about things. It's more there is a long waiting list.
Yeah, it would be very difficult. And readers, you might want to bear this in mind. Listeners, you might want to bear this in mind. It will be very difficult for even the three of us to read every comic ever written.
Mm.
I mean, I struggle to get through Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I actually do know the first kind of mature comic that I ever read. I do remember. I've literally just remembered.
Was it the Beano swimsuit edition?
No, it was The Death of Captain Marvel.
See, I'm not. I kind of put that in as one of those weird sort of in-betweeny points.
It is a weird in-betweeny point, but I'd say it was more mature than the other comics that were around at the time.
Yeah, I think it was, definitely it was looking at more of a serious theme.
And it did raise the question, you know, they've got all these powers, they've got all these abilities, but they've never thought of tackling the biggest killer of, you know, the single biggest killer of humans, which is cancer.
Yeah, actually, because we're reading it at the moment, what I think is a very good example of a mature comic that handles adult themes, but it's kind of very minimal on sort of blood, titillation and language, is Astro City.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's great. It's basically, it's a city full of some fairly obvious superhero pastiches, like there's a guy called the Samaritan who's very obviously Superman. But the stories themselves, they focus more on just the everyday people living in the city.
I've been meaning to read this one.
Trying to get through their lives. It's so good.
Was it Kurt Busiek, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Kurt Busiek. I feel really bad because I've forgotten the artist's name. And also Alex Ross. I'm going to search
Brent,
what the main artist's name is.
Brent
Anderson.
Yeah, Brent Anderson.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, I like some of Busiek's work. I've been meaning to read Astro City for a while.
Yeah, I got like the entire thing on Comixology in a sale, and I've just been kind of working my way through it. Because there's like 16 volumes, Rob. There's quite a lot of Astro City to read.
I think I'm going to have to get it. It's been bumped up my list, Andrew. Now bump Transmetropolitan up your list.
I will. It's on there.
My list is far too long to start bumping anything.
Well, I think we can end there because we've hit on the most adult theme of all. Having lots of comics to read and not the time or money to do it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yep.
Things get in the way, like kids, work, life in general.
I have lots of comics that I want to read. I can't afford to read them. The time I would spend reading them, I have to fill working in order to earn the money to afford all the comics that I will never have the time to read.
It's a vicious circle, isn't it?
God, that's what I want to read, a really mature Batman story. It's just like stuck in the office all day and like sometimes I'll glance out the window to see the Joker like running across rooftops and I'll have a little sigh.
I wish I didn't have this business to run so that I could run across rooftops too.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't really behave like a proper CEO, does he?
Could you just imagine that, the actual CEO, Bruce Wayne, like, he gets home late at night, he goes down to the Batcave, looks at his bat suit, just goes, God, I'm just so tired from work.
So, Master Bruce, shall I prepare the Batmobile?
No, Alfred, tonight it's just Netflix and chill.
Oh, can you imagine, though, if, you know, Dick Grayson left Batman and decided to become Nightwing? Imagine if he couldn't actually, you know, if he had to get a part-time job, so it'd be Dick Grayson, office temp.
Well, plus, then he has to keep taking calls from Bruce, who goes, Dick, the back computer, it's updated, I don't know where all the buttons are now.
Yes.
Where are my documents?
Oh, do you know, I think you've actually hit on the real reason why Bruce Wayne keeps a young boy around. He's the only one who
can to keep up to date with the tech.
Yeah, he's the only one who can work the back computer.
So this is
that's
the next thing.
To keep replacing them with younger kids.
The next incarnation of Robin is just the latest Wayne Tech student IT intern.
Yeah. It explains a lot.
I need you to work a 40-hour week. Oh, and you have to wear this.
Yeah, but the thing is, there's a certain, in order for a comic to be mature, there has to be a degree of immaturity about it. You know, you have to acknowledge that comics are inherently a crazy, stupid thing, which allows you to tell these mature stories in a way that you wouldn't be able to do in any other form.
Yeah, and speaking of these crazy, stupid comics, we'll be back with some what we have read with our eyes after this break.
Hi, my name's Kate Ashwin. I draw Widdershins at widdershinscomic.com, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Hello. Do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films, and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out The Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well-staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week, and do it reasonably well.
So, yeah, all of our shows, you can find, well, everything that we do on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk. It's got our Patreon, it's got our shop, it's got everything on there. We've also got a YouTube channel, so if you're of a mind, go have a look where Andrew is doing a series of videos about...
Oh, yeah, the second one is actually out now. Yeah, about weird and obscure comic book characters. Yeah. This time, it's Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man. He's all the things.
Yes, he is everything. Yeah, I've had a watch of it. It's a real surprise that some of the things that you point out with Animal, Mineral, Vegetable Man that I didn't know. I was going, really?
Yeah, because his origin story is just bananas.
Yeah.
And I guess a tiger and like some bismuth. There we go.
Didn't you mention there was a coconut in there somewhere?
Probably.
And if not, there should have been. Anyway, yeah, so check that out.
I'm Dave from Geek Corner, and if you pop yourselves along to the Regency West Mall in Stockton-on-Tees, you can find a range of things from comics to manga, anime, Magic the Gathering cards, Pokemon cards, pretty much any sort of TCG, prop making. We have props for sale on the shop floor as well. We do pretty much everything. So if you're into your cool geeky stuff, get yourselves along.
Hello and welcome back to 4Panel. And this is the section where we tell you things what we liked and didn't like about stuff what we've been reading. And we're kicking off with Rob.
Yes, and I've got Falcon, which on the cover says, from Comicsverse, terrifically ushers forward a new age for Sam Wilson's Falcon. Well, that was a lie, wasn't it?
I mean, they never said it was a very long age.
See, this is after the events of Secret Empire, and it's by Rodney Barnes, with art by Joshua Cassara and Sebastian Cabral. And it's a bit of an odd duck. I'm honestly not sure what I make of this. This is Falcon 2017 number 1-8, right? And it's bizarre, right? Falcon, to my mind, Falcon, when he's not part of the Avengers, for me, is basically maybe a little bit above a street-level hero, because he does work for the army and S.H.I.E.L.D. at times. Yeah?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't put Falcon up against any kind of real cosmic threats, would you?
Even though he has the spectacular powers of wings and telling some birds to peck at stuff.
Yes. So, Falcon is trying to make peace between two rival gangs, one black, one Latino, in Chicago, and he's trying to make peace between these gangs, only for things to go awry when Dre, the leader of the African American gang, at the peace thing, instead of shaking the hands of the Latino gang leader, shoots him in the head. Sam Wilson at that point can't move because he's basically been controlled and unable to move. That causes citywide violence, everything's burning, people are dying left, right, and center, and all because the mayor is secretly Blackheart. Which leads me to my first question, Andrew, Mr. Comic Sage. Yeah. Who the hell is Blackheart? I know he's Mephisto's kid, but who the hell is Blackheart?
Yeah, Blackheart is literally a demon from hell.
Right. And so Blackheart is apparently working with Dre to basically bring chaos and disruption and death to planet Earth for reasons that only Blackheart really understands. Sam Wilson's... Oh. Yeah.
But also to further explain, the Blackheart is the son of a devil, not to be confused with the son of Satan, who is not actually the son of Satan, he is the son of Marduk.
Yes, speaking of whom, he does appear in this.
Marduk or Satan or Mephisto?
Son of Satan.
Oh, okay.
There's
lots of Satans in the Marvel Universe. Yeah.
Hellstrom does appear in this, right?
But also which Hellstrom?
Would it save time if you listed who doesn't appear?
Well, I'll get to that. Okay, Sam Wilson is up against this cosmic power that he doesn't understand, and so he calls in the troops. He calls in some of his friends. He has a friend who's working with him called Patriot, I believe. This young kid called Sean, who has a shield and a white suit and flies around sometimes on his suit. Sorry.
Oh yeah, shield. I think he's new. He's got like a Green Goblin glider style thing, doesn't he?
Yeah. And again,
probably not someone I'd draft in to fight literally a demon from hell.
Yeah, and he's also got some voodoo guy who's also helping him, some kind of voodoo witch doctor.
You're saying that, Andrew. Is that because of his relative lack of experience? Because he's got to get that experience somehow.
You were very chuck them in at the deep end style of swimming coach, aren't you, Mick?
I am, yeah.
I can just imagine him. Okay, son, it's time for you to learn how to swim. In you go.
just ask the graduate that we've got working for us at the moment.
No, son. One arm over the other. No, one arm over the other. And then throws him like...
Can we have another pupil, please?
What's that? You're the all-new wasp. Okay, great. There's Thanos.
So, anyway, the voodoo guy tries to take on Blackheart, yada, yada, yada. Sam Wilson basically gets killed in this. He's not actually dead.
That's only 8 issues long.
Yeah, he's not actually dead. It's just his soul has been extracted and sent to hell, which is dead, as far as I'm concerned.
that seems like you are giving over hairs a bit there.
Yeah. But the thing is, Sam Wilson somehow escaped from hell because Mephisto, even though Sam Wilson has somehow ended up in hell, I'm not sure how, because he's supposed to be a hero. He somehow ended up in hell. Mephisto has his hands on him now, and Mephisto doesn't want to let him go. They're like, okay. The two-gun kid is kind of, you know, I don't know. Is he Sam's spirit animal? Is he just a guide? Is he working for Mephisto? I don't know. But the voodoo guy goes to Son of Satan, Damien Hellstrom, is it?
Yep.
And convinces Son of Satan to get involved because Blackheart is technically Damien's brother. And also out of the
no,
woodwork...
No, he isn't. Well, they are unrelated.
Well, they call each other brothers in this.
You are factually incorrect, Falcon series.
Yeah. Thing is, this is the other question I had. Who the hell is the other Falcon and why does he have such giant eyes?
Oh, Falcon is another dude who became the Falcon when Falcon was Captain America. His superpower is that he's a Falcon.
Is this another Captain Marvel thing?
Kind of. He's like some... He might be a mutant or an inhuman or something. He's a Birdman.
Yeah, because this Birdman at one point calls Sam his teacher, his father, and his friend. I was confused by that. I thought it sounded a bit redneck at one point.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they've known each other for like a month in comic time.
So anyway, long story short, Sam escapes from hell only for everything to go completely wrong, even though they managed to beat Blackheart. Because then they're attacked by Deacon Frost and his army of vampires that he literally just created. This is when Sam is trying to convince Misty Knight to get back together with him, and who should turn up in the middle of this fight with the vampires but Blade, who also has a thing for Misty Knight. She's a popular lady.
Yep, that's sure a plot point that they've just decided on in there.
Yeah, and so...
Blade and Misty Knight have ever even met before.
Yeah, I'm really confused by this. It's bizarre, like I said. I don't know what to make of this. It's got some good artwork. It's got, you know, it's got some interesting ideas, I suppose. But, you know, somehow, to me, while I was reading this, you remember 90s Hulk?
Oh, the Peter David stuff.
Yeah. There was a thing. Do you remember the issue where... They had the wedding of Rick Jones and his girlfriend.
Oh, boy, do I.
And Mephisto turned up, and everyone was convinced that Hulk had somehow beaten Mephisto, but it was actually Mephisto's ploy because he wanted Banner's soul, and it was basically he was playing the long game. This, to me, just reads a lot like that.
But even weirder, because that's just such a weird premise for a book about the Falcon.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I'm kind of not surprised they ended it. Because apparently Falcon's partner is called Redwing, isn't it? The bird.
Yeah.
Apparently he also has vampiric abilities.
Oh yeah, I think he got bitten by like Brother Blood or something.
Because he basically, he quite literally eats out Deacon Frost's heart.
God, Falcon's just weird.
Yes, it is.
With his Birdman psychic and his vampire Falcon.
Yeah.
And also Two-Gun Kid.
Yeah, but he is an item with Misty Knight now, officially in the Marvel Universe, so...
Sure, Grace, why not?
So anyway, Andrew.
Well, from one incredibly confusing book to another confusing but in a very different way book, because I have been reading She-Hulk, the Human Machine by Jonathan Hickman and... what's his name?
Weaver.
Dustin Weaver. I had the Weaver, I just... couldn't remember his first name.
Okay. This is S.H.I.E.L.D. as in the organisation and not the hero called the S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, this is S.H.I.E.L.D., the Marvel Comics organisation. But also no, because it's not really to do with them. Except also it kind of is.
And I covered issues 1-4 of this a few...
Well, maybe. Because also, despite this being issues 1-6, this is technically issues 1-6 of Volume 2. And we're not sure if you covered... Volumes 1-4 of Volume 1 or Volume 2?
I did 1-4 of Volume 2 because it was The Human Machine.
Ah, right, okay. Then yeah, this is kind of an update on that. Because back when you did it, you were reading those four issues which were written in 2010 and 2011.
And then came out in a collected edition.
Yes. And yes. I'm reading those, plus issues 5 and 6.
Which I then collected as separate issues. Yes!
Yeah, because they came out literally a few months ago.
Yeah.
What?
There's like an 8-year gap.
What?
Because for years, S.H.I.E.L.D. was like one of those things that would appear on lists of like series that are just never going to be finished. But surprise, they actually finish S.H.I.E.L.D.
So in between, they've actually had about two or three S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. series that have started and completed in between issues 4 and 5 of this series.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, there's been 5 full seasons of the TV show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And 7/10 of the cinematic universe has been released.
Oh, yeah, that's a point.
It's I'm slightly flabbergasted that this even exists. So to get into it, to people who aren't familiar with the series, this is basically kind of like the secret origin of S.H.I.E.L.D. as an organization, but in more of a metaphysical sense of like, they are the group that inspired the idea that would eventually become S.H.I.E.L.D., but also maybe S.H.I.E.L.D. was originally invented in the 1960s, and the idea permeates through time and like travels backwards to the beginning of time to inspire the organization of the Brotherhood of the S.H.I.E.L.D.
It's almost like a Marvel equivalent of the idea of Arthur being the once and future king, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. It's like that kind of flibbly, fobbly, timey-wimey stuff. So yeah, so S.H.I.E.L.D. is actually an ancient organization started by the pharaoh Imhotep in, like, I think something like the year 2060 BC.
Yep, that's about right.
When he and... A little reference I really liked, it was his army, including Apocalypse and like an ancient Egyptian version, Moon Knight, defended Egypt from the Brood. And since then, kind of the greatest minds of every generation have come together as part of the Brotherhood of the S.H.I.E.L.D. to defend us from that which would destroy Earth, including the likes of Galileo, Leonardo da Vinci, and Isaac Newton.
What, they were aliens?
No, they were part
of the High Council of S.H.I.E.L.D. Oh, weren't you paying attention?
I was. It was just confusing the way he worded it.
You haven't read the comic.
Yeah, that's confusing. It's basically, it's this huge, epic, like, interwoven plot about basically a big war between Da Vinci and Newton for the leadership of S.H.I.E.L.D.
But I think also, it could be accurately described as a schism.
It is indeed a schism. But then also there's Leonid, the man with like stars in his body, who has to travel through time to save the world from a celestial that was born in the heart of the sun and discovered like the secret math of the universe and went insane.
Oh, do hope people at home are taking notes.
You mentioned you mentioned a schism. Why do I get the feeling that Isaac Newton was the one who formed Hydra?
No, he didn't. I mean, to be honest, the schism is only a part of it. Because it's also about, you know, the fundamental movers of the universe coming together to form the human machine so that they may rewrite time so that men can be both free to access their own destinies, but also chained to the harsh yoke of fate.
Okay, so America then?
No. Look, to be honest, you're not going to understand S.H.I.E.L.D. unless you read it. Then also read it again. And maybe give it a third read for just to be safe.
And maybe try one of them being backwards.
Okay, I have to ask, and Mick will be able to answer me this. I don't think Andrew can yet until he's been introduced to it. Mick, on a scale of 1 to Inkle, how confusing is it?
I would rate this as being about 0.6 of an Inkle.
Oh, God, that confusing?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think possibly because when you pick up a comic called S.H.I.E.L.D., you have a certain expectation.
Yeah,
I should point out...
And Nick, it destroys it on page one.
Like, Nick Fury does not even appear in this series.
No, without eyes.
I think the closest we get is that, like, one issue kind of explains what the Infinity Formula is, which is what Nick Fury took to stop himself from aging. But that's about all the reference we get to, like, S.H.I.E.L.D., the global spy organization. This is, see... thing is, I love this series, but I also realise it's not going to be for everyone.
Yeah, and anybody who tunes in every week to see Phil Coulson and the gang fighting off Hydra and its remnants, this isn't that S.H.I.E.L.D.
Sorry, it really isn't. I'm just chuckling over you saying Phil Coulson and the gang, because then I suddenly went cool in the gang.
Oh, I should try and predict how your mind's going to warp sentences, shouldn't I?
Maybe that's what Jonathan Hickman did, and that's why he can write things like S.H.I.E.L.D. He was irreparably broken by trying to understand the true nature of Rob.
Yeah, could be.
But no, it's genuinely, it's so good. It's like this huge, sprawling, epic, complicated time travel story. And just the art is absolutely phenomenal.
It is. Like, it's like proper art, isn't it?
Yeah. Like there's issue 5, I think it is, where it's split across 3 different timelines. And you can kind of read it across ways. Like it's split into 3 sort of newspaper strips. But then there's also things like repeating across each timeline and bits going in between the two. And it's just, yeah, it's like you say, it is actual art.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, S.H.I.E.L.D., it is superb, but some people are also going to hate it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair summation.
Yeah.
Cool. So, Mick, then.
Slime 7, the long-awaited return of the slime. So, slime is still going strong. Rimuru, I'm not going to recap the whole thing, you know, salaryman gets stabbed, blah, 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 wakes up in fantasy world, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So, Rimuru, at the end of Volume 6, has formed the Jura Forest Alliance with the blessing of the Dryads and has sworn, therefore, to protect the forest from those who would do it harm. Ooh, maybe he could probably be part of the Brotherhood of the Shield.
Possibly.
Inevitably, I would say. And the lizard men who were being a bit uppity in Volumes 5 and 6, have come to join the capital of the new alliance, which has been called Rimuru, because they love him. And this has upset the Demon Lords, who sent the Orc Lord to invade the forest. The Demon Lords have got a pact where they're not allowed to interfere with each other's plans, whatever those plans may be. One of the Demon Lords has decided to go and live in Tempest. In Rimuru, and become best friends with Rimuru as well. Now, the demon lord in question is called
Milim,
and just trying to confirm a name because it was a series I didn't really watch, but there was a character in it that, from the bits I did see, was a perfect sort of parallel for how Milim is. And I'm just trying to. The series was Rugrats.
Oh, you're on about
Angelica.
Yeah, Angelica. Yes, Angelica.
That is not where I thought that was going.
No, Angelica. I will agree totally with Mick on this. Angelica and Milim are basically identical.
Yeah. So Angelica. Sorry, Milim. it's basically trouble.
Yeah.
And she's got that same sort of annoying and slightly misbehaved, spoilt brat air that Angelica has.
Yeah.
But it manifests itself in that people who upset her end up beaten to a pulp.
Yeah.
And this kind of rankles with Rimuru a little bit, and he keeps trying to find ways to sort of manage it. But of course, her presence has been felt by the other demon lords, who also want a piece of the Jura Forest Alliance. But they're not allowed to interfere directly, so they're trying to find ways to plot against Milim. Meanwhile, Rimuru is trying to convince his human neighbours that having a town full of monsters is not necessarily a bad thing. And he gets visited by the Dwarf King, who he crossed paths with in, I believe, issue 3, or volume 3, rather, and manages to convince him. And then he gets visited by the representatives of a kind of corrupt official from a neighbouring village who's embezzled the defence budget and therefore wants to check what the threat level is in the forest in the hope that he doesn't need to use the defence that he hasn't got. His defence basically consists of 3 teenage boys.
Yes.
One of whom is a very lowly wizard. So the main problem that Rimuru's got is that all he can say is that the Orc Lord has been defeated, but the people that defeated it was a town full of monsters. If the human representatives go back to their towns and their countries and say, it's all right, the Orc Lord's dead, it was killed by some other monsters, the humans are going to go, well, what kind of threat are these other monsters if they can take out an Orc Lord? So we're now getting into the more political intrigue. It's almost like Slime has entered a sort of Game of Thrones stage.
Yeah.
But it continues to be entertaining. It continues to be full of wit and charm. Still beautifully drawn. There's still some beautiful outtakes towards the end about certain characters and how they're portrayed and drawn. And the alternative version of events, as told by the Storm Dragon, has taken a turn in that he's developing a relationship with an Ifrit.
Yeah, the Ifrit's the one that was possessing what's-her-face? I've forgotten. You know, the hero, the woman that died.
Shizu,
yeah.
Yeah. So they're developing a relationship and they're now trapped within Rimuru and observing events and then bickering about them. So
also playing shogi.
Sorry?
Also playing shogi.
Yeah.
Japanese chess.
So whereas that could have got a bit stale, just the constant sarcastic retelling of what you've already read in the manga.
Yeah.
It's now taken on its own life, if you like, and is taking on a different thing. So once again, I find myself just forlornly wishing that I had volume 8 to crack on with.
Working on it.
Good.
Back over to you, Rob.
Yes. And now it's time for something completely different, yet still the same as something that Andrew recommended I should read ages ago and that I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed when he loaned me his copy of Next Wave. No, it's not yes! Next Wave. This is The Paybacks, which is written by Donny Cates with art by Elliot Rahal and... it's written by Donny Cates and Elliot Rahal with art by Jeff Shaw. And it's out from Dark Horse. And I'm just going to read... these are the current members of The Paybacks. The Paybacks are a bunch of repossession superpowered beings. Now, the idea is that when a superhero or supervillain needs to do something like build a secret lair or something like that, they need a loan. And so they take out the loan, and when they can't afford to pay it back, the Paybacks go and repossess stuff. They are basically superpowered repo men and women. And
okay, you're right. I'm definitely into this. I want this.
See, as soon as I said that, I thought, right, this is totally Andrew's jam. You have Imari Reigns, who is the team leader. She is equal parts whiskey and blood, served warm and at night, and is currently reading Sheriff of Babylon by King and Gerards and loving it. You have Blood Pouch, who is the funny one. He's basically a Rob Liefeld character from the 90s. He has so many pouches that he even has an eye pouch.
His name is Blood Pouch.
Yes. You have Skis Squatch, who is a friend of the trees and the things that live in them, party animal, a 40-ounce partially poured out for dead homies, and you can't read comics when you're dead, kids. That's his comments. The Soviet Nunchuck, which I think is an amazing name, who is apparently the only man to have ever fought in the Cold War.
Okay.
Which I think is just the best line. I'm going to leave it at that because it describes him to a T. Miss Adventure, who is allegedly the deadly one, and where else? She can do that thing where she flips her eyelids inside out so they're all gross. Driver, who drives the van, angry. With Driver, all you've got is drives the van, angry, cigarettes, where else, and pronounced Magneto in whatever fashion you think is incorrect. You also have Night-Night, who is the British equivalent of Batman, who has a unicorn that he never rides. It's basically his sidekick instead. His real name is Archibald Primrose III, and he's actually afraid of the dark.
God, I hate how much this book sounds like it's written specifically for me.
Exactly. You have a guy called Battery, whose real name is Billy Bob Spartan. He's a key member of the world's greatest superhero team, The Command, and he's New York City's premier billionaire playboy. Jacob Destruction, who's a kid in a bubble. He is the boy in the bubble, mainly because his skin explodes into napalm when it's exposed to air. You have Dr.
But surely there's air in the bubble.
Yeah. You have Mr. Pierce, who is classified, and possibly my greatest love, the greatest character in this. There are other characters. The greatest character in this is Dr. Black, who is basically Dr. Strange, but kind of wacky, psychedelic Dr. Strange with full acknowledgement of the wacky psychedelia.
Dr. Strange, if he actually just took the hallucinogenics that Steve Ditko probably did.
Yeah. You also have a couple of other characters. Highguard, who comments a lot on forums about how Cap is a Nazi now, but he never actually read the book. What a dick. Oh, also, Highgard has tiny little hands and he's super insecure about it. And the Matador, who is not a comic guy really, but he's been watching Stranger Things like someone's going to take it away from him, and he has the heart of a bull, the strength of a bull, has never seen Raging Bull.
Right.
Sure, why not? I don't think you even really need to see anything else about the series.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. This is a madcap series about superpowered repo men in a van that's not a van, but is actually more than a van, but is still a van. They are basically called Alpha Team. They want to be called the A Team. There is a guy who looks like who is basically the collector in this. They call him the Antiquarian. And in his warehouse, he has the Sword of Omens from Thundercats, the Turtles van, the Infinity Gauntlet, Professor X's chair, the TARDIS, Galactus's helmet, what looks like the X-Men's Blackbird, and various other things.
Okay.
And it's just this madcap ride through just this weird story about how the paybacks become free of their debt. And it involves an ultimate showdown between the heroes and villains. It's got a giant Minotaur with a flaming head, which is inside the van somehow because it's part of the van and represents part of the van. We're not sure what. The van is actually alive. Maybe. There's one bit where the guys who are looking for something specific, they go through a door marked Fear, which, and the art style changes to this kind of nightmarish, almost Arkham Asylum type art style.
Yeah, this sounds very good, and I will have to give it a read.
I've got to say, this on the back, it says, coming this year in the paybacks, action, fun, murder fights, space stuff, and more. See you in September. And I am so seeing these guys in September. I read this, right? And I immediately fell in love with it. This is basically Next Wave kind of turned up to 11.
Which is impressive because Next Wave was already pretty much on 10 and a half.
Yeah. This is kind of this. If you want, right? If I was going to recommend anything to read alongside this, it would first be Next Wave, right? My first choice of comics of a title to read alongside the paybacks would be Next Wave, because the two of them, they kind of go hand in hand. They might be from different companies. They might have completely different characters. Nighty Knight, wherever he's called, he is kind of amazing with how bumbling and idiotic he is. Blood Pouch is just brilliant he loves his friends. He values his friends so much, and he's got these weird powers, but he's covered in pouches. He's so 90s, it hurts.
Okay, Mick, as good as all this is, I think our only chance is we're just going to have to gradually fade Rob out, and that's the only way we can end the show.
Just let me...
I think you're right.
Let me just finish with this. Dr. Black spells Black, B-L-A-Q-K. There, I'm done.
Really?
Yes.
Promise?
Yep.
Quick, end it now, Andrew, while he's got the chance.
Okay, it's over. Run, audience, run, flee.
Sorry.
But yeah, that is all we have time for this week.
Sorry, I didn't mean to take up so much time. It's just so good.
If you wanted to know all about Dark Horse's The Suit, turf.
Next week.
I'll just talk about it next week.
Yes. So, yeah, that's us for this week, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye now.